Ryan Fine.
Hello, everybody. So you get to eat, but even better, you get to listen to me. Right. I heard that this group can handle people who aren't politically correct. Is that true? If not, get out. We'll start there. What was the title of this call? Or what did they say I'm talking about today? MLS. How to get infinite returns off the MLS? Yeah. All right, that's what happens when you email me 4 months ago and say I need a topic for a lunch and you got 5 minutes to answer. What I'm going to share with you guys today is how we get to 100 to 105% financing on any asset you can't negotiate the price on. So I don't care if you buy it off the MLS or just a seller who doesn't want to negotiate. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. So who are you guys? By a show of hands, who already owns rental property? Almost everybody. Who's not bought one yet? Only a couple. Who buys in cash? And I mean actual cash, not say you're a cash buyer and actually use a hard money lender. Who's an actual cash buyer? A few of you. Okay, cool. Who buys with financing? Awesome. If we get 100% financing, we're using financing. So cash guys, you're going to have to get over the idea that you need all the money. Is that fair? All right, so who's this little call for? If you are new at this, you're going to learn how lenders really underwrite deals. How many of you, by a show of hands, have gotten a commitment letter from a lender this week? Couple of you, okay. The rules changed on Wednesday. Fed raises its rates, all the lenders scramble to see how much more they're going to charge you. But you guys are more experienced. I'm gonna show you how to buy a hell of a lot more property than you think you can. A lot more. So we're gonna do three things. How the lenders look at your rentals, how they decide whether or not you get the loan. Lenders love saying, you need some skin in the game. I want to see you're committed. Hell with that. It's their job to write the check, not mine. I found the deal. So we're going to talk about how they tell you they want skin in the game. We nod our heads and smile and then do it our way. And then I'll give you guys some ninja tips on how we structure this so it works out for everybody. We pull that off while you eat your lunch. Are you going to have a good day? So my name is Brian Fine. I've been doing this for a decade. My wife and I started out flipping houses. We'd buy them, fix them, sell them for a profit. And rehab is for quitters. So once you've done 100, hopefully, before you guys get that far into it, you'll never want to do another one again as well. Today we buy rental property and we hold on to it for dear life. I die a little bit inside every time we sell something. My wife is my business partner. I've got a couple of kids, and that's ultimately the why. Why are we spending our time and effort doing this? Because it gets a little stressful. You're going to need a reason. I am a combative martial arts guy, so if you want to have a beer with me and talk about something that isn't real estate, I will cut my friend's nose off to spite their face. I also own a firearm manufacturer, so I like things that go bang. So talk about stuff that isn't real estate. That's how you can get my attention. Okay, I'll just talk louder.
Thank you.
All right, how the mortgage lenders decide whether or not they're gonna write us a loan. Let's start with your money, cash buyers, this one's for you. I hopped on QuickBooks, wow, that isn't centered at all, is it? High tech, awesome. All right, I hopped on QuickBooks and pulled a W-2 $1 million income for 2022 and did the federal withholding. That does not count state, local, or any write-offs that hopefully if you made $1 million, you can afford the accountant to do. Your net would be $667,000 if you made $1 million W-2. Who wants that job? Let's reverse the idea. Let's pretend for a second that all of your money is borrowed, and it is a loan. What are the terms of your loan? Meaning, I will give you a loan today for $667,000. The day you close with me, you owe me $1 million in principal. What are the terms of the loan? That is a 33.25 point origination fee. And you guys have an annual interest rate that we call inflation. Also, this is an adjustable rate mortgage by the month. That's your cash. Have you ever heard of a hard money lender, loan shark, or predatory credit card that even approaches that number? You can't afford your own money. This is why we use other people's. Does that make sense? Show that to somebody else. Yes, you all probably don't have $1 million W-2. I got it. Go ahead and do it for 100K. It's still a 10 to 20 point origination fee, and the interest rate is the same. So what is a property really worth? Write this down. This took us about 600 doors to figure out. An income-producing asset is worth either its appraised value or its debt service coverage ratio, whichever is lower. That's it. It's not worth its comps. It's not worth its cap rate. It's not worth its cash-on-cash return. It is worth either what the appraiser says it is or the debt coverage ratio. How many of you, by a show of hands, have no idea what a debt service coverage ratio is? I will argue this is the most important underwriting number you have. All those other ones, cap rate, cash on cash return, all that, they really don't matter. They're highly subjective. This one is about as close to real as we get. DSCR is net operating income. That's the gross rent minus all the expenses divided by the debt service. The expenses include the taxes and insurance. The debt service is just your principal and interest payments. If you're doing an arbitrage play or a sublease or something, it would be the lease payment as well. When you divide these numbers, you're going to get a number somewhere between 0.1 and probably about 4. It would be pretty phenomenal. Here's what this number means. If I have a debt service coverage ratio of 1.0, that means the property makes exactly as much money as it costs. Your cash flow is nothing, but so is your cost of holding if it's calculated correctly. Does that make sense? Yes?
Yes.
All right, lenders will vary pretty heavily on what they want for debt service coverage ratio. 1.0 to 1.3 is kind of the current range you're going to see. Most of your banks, commercial lenders, credit unions, older institutions who still live in the 2019 or older range want a 1.25 or better on everything. So yeah, some of you guys are nodding yes. This is the number you're used to. And they vary for expenses as well when they calculate the NOI. They won't necessarily take what you give them. You might say, oh, I'm going to self-manage. I have no management. That's a 10% management fee. And they will put it into their calculation, and you don't get to tell them otherwise. Right? All lenders will vary on this. I'm going to give you just a broad stroke on it. For single families, that's a 1-4 unit in lender speak. Anything 1-4 is considered a single family home. The expense ratio will be 30% of the gross rent or your actual, whichever is higher. So if you can show them it's more, they'll take more. But if you show them it's 20% or 25, it's still 30 when they calculate it. Your multifamilies are higher. Why are multifamilies higher? A little louder.
More risk?
No, not necessarily more risk. It's expenses, stuff we got to pay. Common areas, landscaping, that kind of stuff. Jacks up the number pretty good. Also, in most areas, the taxes are a little nastier as well. So that just turns it up a little more. Okay? So 40% or actual on a multi. And this, again, is just for most lenders. This is how our credit unions and banks do it. On the other hand, I have lenders who ignore certain things on purpose to make the number easier to hit. I have a lender who pretends there's no such thing as vacancy. I mean, I can't pretend that, but I appreciate that they do. Right? So when you speak to your lender, you start asking how they calculate DSCR, you'll know real fast if you're talking to somebody who actually knows what they're doing. If you're talking to a loan broker, there is every chance they have no clue what this, any of this language even means. If you're talking to an actual loan officer who understands the underwriting, your credibility in their eyes will go through the roof just for asking these questions. Yes? All right, this can vastly change the loan amount. So let's say I have a lender who tells me they want a 1.1 debt service coverage ratio. If I present them a deal that's at a 1.0 by their math, it doesn't matter what my math was, it only matters what theirs was, they will still give me the loan. The way they're going to do it is by lowering the loan amount until their math says it's 1.1. So instead of telling me, hey, we'll give you up to 80%, how they determine the up to 80% is it's got to be a DSCR 1.1. So if at 80% it's at 1.0, they'll simply give me less money until it hits 1.1 on their spreadsheet. Make sense? This is why it's really important that you guys know how to calculate this number yourself, the way that they do. All right, any questions on DSCR before I move forward? The volume of transactions going on in the US has been in free fall for quite some time. The total amount of houses being bought and sold is way down. You all know this? Okay. Is that good news or bad news for mortgage companies? That's really bad. And also the refi free-for-all ended with the Fed rate hike. So you hear these guys, a lot of these big ones, Rocket Mortgage and stuff, they're laying off thousands of people. They have no business left. The ones who are left who are going to weather this storm and be good for the next few years and continue to write notes, they've been through this before. A lot of them survived 2008. Right? And what they're trying to do, they know that when somebody comes into their office and says, I want a loan, or more likely fills out some form on a website somewhere, the only thing that you're thinking of in their mind is what's the interest rate? That is the last question I ask. I barely care. Right? I want to know, how do they underwrite the asset? Because if we can't reach closing, I don't care if it's 5% or 50%, I'm not going to get the note. Make sense? Okay. Yes.
What's the topic?
How we get infinite returns. 100, 105% financing.
So it's not the MLS.
MLS is simply a location where you can find as many properties as you want, but you likely cannot negotiate the price. Do I need to explain that again? Let me explain that a little more. So the question was, what's the topic? What are we talking about here? How do we get to an infinite return is our topic. And she said, what about the MLS? The MLS is where the most properties are available for sale, period. Yes?
Yes.
Nowhere else, it's about 90-some percent, depends on which realtor stat you feel like pulling. Generally, those properties are listed by an agent who has set an expectation with a seller on the price. Have you all seen this? So if I come in as an investor and say, hey, you listed this asset at 100K, anybody with two brain cells can figure out it's not worth more than 50, am I going to get the deal? The negotiation range on the MLS is typically not more than 10%. It's very narrow. So for our purposes, the MLS is simply a place where you don't get to negotiate. That okay? So go out, find it. Now we say, all right, if I want to buy it anyway, how do I pay for it? Preferably without my money. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. So the lender is going to look at that purchase price. Actually, they're going to ignore it altogether. They don't care what the purchase price is. They care what the debt coverage ratio is. So calculate that and see how close it comes to the purchase price. Does that make sense? Everybody got that? The debt coverage ratio is a leveraged number. So if you go ahead and put together a spreadsheet for it or have some way of underwriting your stuff, the worst way to change, or the least efficient way to change your debt coverage ratio, is to change the purchase price. You'll have to change the purchase price a whole lot to move DSCR. It is far more efficient to lower the loan amount, increase the income, or decrease the expenses. Yes? All right. Let's talk about getting to 100%. First, let me give you the super lame answer. You can take whole seminars on this. Here's the lame answer. You can get seller financing. All you got to do is ask the seller to give you the damn house. It works. It really does. There are people who have reasons to do that. Taking a property subject to, lease option, all that stuff. Those are all valid answers. In my world, they're a very niche thing. They are not a scalable answer. How many of those do you think exist each year in your market? It's definitely not 15%. I would believe 15 to 30 in a metro area of a million, right? So if you got 100% market share, how likely is that? If you got every single one of them, is it enough for your business? That's why I say it's not a scalable strategy. It still works though. Some people love it and it has its place. We're gonna talk about how to do it, you know, the other 99% of the time. All right, have you guys had an inflation talk this week? I haven't been in any of these rooms. Has anybody talked about inflation here? Am I the first?
Yes.
I'm the first talking about inflation? Okay, cool. Who really doesn't know what inflation is or how it works? Other than knowing it sucks, does anybody not really get it? We're all experts? Fantastic. Okay, the red line or orange line here, that is the consumer price index as given to us by our lords and saviors at the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That is coming in at an 8.1% year over year CPI, and that is the number that is generally considered inflation. Yes? Did you know that the way they calculate CPI has changed three times since 1980? Were you aware of that? So originally, way, way back in the dawn of, you know, the 70s and 80s, they came up with, we should take all the things that people buy and measure how much the prices change month over month so we can track inflation. That seems like an economically good idea. And so they did that. And then that number got way too high for people to get reelected. So like any good government solution, the answer was, let's change the math, right? Obviously, this math is wrong. Let's do that. So in 1990, they changed the math the first time, and they changed it again in 2000 to what it is today. So your top chart there, we take the exact same data that we have today. The blue line is using the 1990 equation for calculating CPI. It's different weighting on the same items. So that would put it not at 8.1%, is what I think it's at today. That would put you right at about 11.5 for your inflation rate. In the 80s, it was pretty much completely unweighted. And if you believe that that is a more accurate number, that puts you around 17 year over year inflation. Personally, the way to figure it out for yourselves is actually if you jump on their website, go under the CPI section, and bring up the line items. It actually has them all there. Just take all the ones you pay for, and you can figure out what your personal inflation rate is. For example, food has gone up quite a bit, but if you eat out a lot, it hasn't hit you very hard. So you might not notice. right? So that's, have you ever heard that before? It's all subjective?
Yeah.
All right? So what?
That's shadow stats, right?
That's shadow stats, yeah. Yeah, shadow stats is where you can pull that. That's completely free, shadow stats inflation. They give you that data. Personally, I think for the majority of people in this room, you are probably at the top chart. You guys are probably riding at about 11 for your actual inflation rate. Make sense? This one here, that is your 30-year fixed owner-occupant mortgage as of yesterday. So you can see how it's changed since January 2020. And where it stands today, it's just about 7% according to them. I was quoted for an owner-occupant 30-year 7.2 last week. So you're somewhere right in there. What we actually buy with is not generally that stuff. We're buying with what we call non-QM or non-qualified mortgage financing, commercial financing. So our commercial rates are running about 7.25% to 8%. They're generally doing those on a 15 to 25 year AM schedule. For most of the long-term rentals you guys would buy, a 15 would be zero cash flow. The normal strategy that, or reason people do those, that's when you're trying to reach free and clear as fast as you can. Because it's a excellent high pay down. It also slightly lower rate. Problem is that monthly payment is just brutal. So you don't have cash flow when you're done. If you got kids and you want to hand them a free and clear property in 15 years when they graduate high school, not a bad idea. As an investment strategy for yourself, some gurus absolutely love that stuff. I'm pretty against it. 20-year can actually work. It's a little marginal, kind of your halfway point. 25 tends to work fine. We do a lot of 25 years. That gets that payment low enough. Non-QM, this is our hard money. We're doing a ton of this right now. It closes well, it finances well, and they calculate their DSCRs in a way that actually works. We're at about 8 to 9% today for a 30-year fixed. That is as long as you are under 4 units per tax parcel. For a 5 and up, cry yourself to sleep. It's not pretty right now. You're going to be at about a 70% LTC and a higher interest rate. They're being really nasty about that. Okay, so it's a little rough for you guys buying multis. Bigger down payments be with you. As long as inflation is higher than the mortgage rates you're being paid to borrow. The money that they lend you to buy the house is worth more than the money you're paying them back. So if you determine your own personal rate, well, let's just use the government. Let's pretend I trust them for a second. They say it's only 8.1, which means if I'm borrowing my money at 8, I'm being paid 0.01% annual for my mortgage. Who wants that money? It's effectively free. They love saying, you'll hear this a lot, this is the argument for have free and clear property. If I buy a $100,000 house and take a 30-year AM schedule to its conclusion, I paid over $300,000 for the asset. Adjusted for inflation, I paid $75,000. It's free. Right? There's calculators that'll show you that, right? So as long as, and even if it gets close, how many of you would borrow your money at 1%? 2, 3, 4, 5, finally got a couple of hands to go down, right? To get 5% adjusted for inflation today, if we believe the government, you'll need a 13% mortgage. You guys get that? I'm sorry? So adjusted for inflation, take inflation and subtract it off the interest rate on your mortgage. If that number comes up negative, you're being paid to take it. If it comes up positive, well, then it's still really cheap money. In order for it to hit high enough that people started dropping their hands and say they don't actually want the money anymore, it's too expensive, we would have to get to about 13. And that's assuming we're using the government CPI. If you guys are riding at 11 instead, well, then you're at 16. Make sense? There are four ways you can buy a rental asset, or this is any income-producing asset. Way one, cash money. Reach into your couch, pull out some quarters, show up at closing with a bag, sign some papers, own a house. That one's pretty straightforward, right? No explanation needed? Okay, just checking. All right, second way to do it. We're gonna get a senior debt lender. I call it a bank on here, but it could be anybody, it's fine. And they're gonna give us some percentage. Today that percentage is 75. We will be responsible for bringing the remaining. What I have left out of this very simplistic explanation is closing costs, which are about another 5K in this example. So you really are gonna need about 30K in cash to do this. Way three. We get ourselves a private lender, somebody else's money, and they bring the 100 grand. And likely we have some kind of repayment term with them unless they're a really good friend. Yeah, you're catching on. Okay, it was a joke. But it would be an awesome deal if you could get it. Third way is my favorite. We get the bank to do that 75, and we get our friend to do the rest of it. Private capital for the down payment and closing costs. That is infinite return. That is where we have no money in an asset that produces a return of any sort above zero. If I own a property at 105% leverage, the cash flow is $1 a year. That is an infinite dollar. I pay nothing for it. And that doesn't count that I get all of the depreciation, appreciation, two mortgage pay downs, and raise the rent every year. So that's infinite return. Here's what's going to happen when you try to do what I just told you. Three major kinds of lenders we deal with. Institutional lenders, your banks, your credit unions, hedge funds, big stuff. We have non-QM lenders. Those are our hard money guys. There's like 10 of them in the hall. And then you have your private guys. And there's plenty of them running around here too. Your institutional people, their underwriting process is a guarantor, that's you, plus an asset at what they call full doc. Full doc. With very small variation, this is what they're going to ask for. 2 to 3 years of tax returns, a personal financial statement, a loan application, and a bank statement showing the down payment and closing costs. Oh, and a hard credit check. At this point, you need whoever's the guarantor has to have a FICO score above 720. You will have a very hard time if you're at 719. You're going to get a lower loan to value. You'll need more money. Institutional guys weight the guarantor. That means if they look at the property and it's like, not quite sure it's there, but you look amazing. Nice shiny credit score, good assets, good personal financial statement, they'll probably still give you the loan. Then again, the deal can look absolutely phenomenal. Your FICO score isn't high enough and there's some shady stuff on your tax returns, you'll need to go elsewhere. Okay. What they're giving us, LTC is loan to cost. That means it doesn't matter what you're paying for the asset, that is the percentage of it they will give you. Institutional guys run 50 to 80%. 80 is almost gone because we can't hit the DSCR with almost anything close to market value today. So you guys are mostly going to be buying at 75. Getting down to the 50s, if you require what's called a non-recourse loan, if you're buying real estate inside of a retirement account or a trust or something like that, the terms suck a lot more because they can't come after you. And so that's usually down in the 50s. There's 60 maybe. Their speed, it doesn't get slower than them. It really doesn't. So when we talk about how long it takes to close something, you can take them as the longest timeline possible. Traditionally, that's about 45 days. We've had deals go on for 5 months while they try to figure everything out. So if you are working with a seller who doesn't have endless patience with you, this can be difficult. Will they allow mezzanine debt? Mezzanine debt is this. Not your money for the down payment and closing costs. It's a fancy word, comes from commercial capital stack financing. There's a lot of different ways to secure it, but do they allow it? The answer isn't just no, it's usually no, and you have to sign explicitly a document saying you're not doing it or you're committing mortgage fraud. Our non-QM guys, same general idea. It's the guarantor and the asset at full or what we call low doc. Low doc is a hard credit check and a bank statement. It's a much easier day. No tax returns for you, usually. And they weight the asset. So if you look a little shady, but the deal looks good, you'll probably get a loan. Right? They'll give us somewhere to 50 to 90%. There is 100% financing in non-QM world. It's generally for a rehab loan, not a long-term buy and hold. So 90 is about as high as you're going to get. Most of the time, though, again, you guys are going to be looking at a 75 for most of what you'd take down. Speed, they are somewhat faster. Appraisal plus 2 weeks. And they, this is a bit of a technicality, they will order the appraisal before initial underwriting, which is one reason that the institutional guys are usually 2 to 3 weeks longer. So appraisal plus about 2 weeks and you got your close. They will sometimes allow mezzanine debt, specifically if it's the seller holding a note. But most of the ones we do with that allow that will still want to see 10% of your money in the deal. That's at least typically the number I hear. You guys heard that before? They allow that stuff? Okay. All right, and then private cash, guarantor plus asset, that's it. Low doc or no doc. No doc means literally they don't ask you for anything. Just, yeah, here's your loan. It's based completely on the relationship. They trust you or they don't trust you. What they will lend, somewhere between nothing and everything. And they typically are the mezzanine debt. They are the second position. All right? Does everybody get how lenders look at this? Yes? Have I confused you? Gone anywhere weird? All right, now we just said that they won't allow you to do this. Let's talk about how to do it anyway, yes? All right, first way. This is what if you ask, it's, generally if you ask a loan officer, you're gonna need to get them over a bar to have this conversation. We're gonna need a couple of beers in them. But this is the answer that they will give you when you get them about three rounds in. They'll tell you to partner with your mezzanine lender. Put them on the LLC that's buying the asset. Both of you go through underwriting. So it's a business partnership from their point of view. They're super happy with that. When you're done, you either leave them there and they're getting taken care of just fine, or go ahead and kick them off the LLC and record yourself a mortgage after closing. They're never gonna know, okay? So that's a really straightforward way to do it. That's the answer. Again, you'd have to get them drunk, but that's the answer that would work. And totally follows the rules the whole time. Everybody get that one?
But your partner's on the loan and not on the title.
Your lender is on the entity that holds the property, and they will be underwriting them for the loan. In this scenario, I'll give you another one. Don't worry. All right. Variation number one. This is actually how we at Coast to Coast buy the majority of our own assets. We use our own cash to close the deal. So I sign the paperwork that says there's no subordinate lender. I bring my own money. I do my closing. I own property. Yay! Then I reach out to our network of private lenders. We create a shiny new note, and I let them refi back every penny of my cash after closing. Make sense? All right, the key here, this is not the whole $0 down deal thing. This is the you have money to do the deal. You can just take your money back when you're done. How quickly you do that could be days, could be a couple of months. Maybe you want to make sure that the rent gets increased first and you placed a good new tenant or it needs some repair you want to get done before you trust it with your brother's retirement account. Right? Second way, they can get, this is when you don't have the money. Private lender will give you the cash before you purchase the properties. We're going to add them to the entity that's buying it. They have to be at a low threshold. This is the underwriting threshold. Traditionally, it's 15%. I've seen it as low as 5% and as high as 25%. If they own more equity than that, they will have to go through underwriting, usually full doc. So they have to own less. I would not, it's under 15. That doesn't mean 14, that usually means 10. Okay? If you go to the same lender with a whole bunch of like 1% under the number, they're going to ask questions that you don't want to answer. They will accept their cash as the down payment and closing costs because they are a limited partner in the deal. And they will allow it to close, and they will not be on the loan. After closing, you can record a second lien position, put them on as preferred equity, change it however you want, but you have to go through closing first. Everybody get that one? Yes? All right. All right, terms for seconds. What do we do with these people? How do we pay them? Everybody focuses on the interest rate. The interest rate is paid out of your remaining cash flow, and spoiler alert, you don't have any. Just not at the kind of rates we're paying today. And remember, you couldn't negotiate your price down by, you know, 30 to 40% to give yourself a margin, not if you wanted to actually buy an asset anyway. Set an amortization schedule. You can do interest only. We like an AM schedule because I like a little bit of principal pay down. Even if it's tiny, it helps. So a 30-year is a really nice way to do it. That doesn't mean you're keeping their money for 30 years. You can balloon that out whenever you'd like. Terms are our friend. Hopefully, you guys are going to some creative financing segments here. You'll learn a bunch of fun ways, but a quick shortcut is look at every advertisement you've ever got to sign up for a credit card. All those terms can apply to lending. Our issue when we're acquiring an asset with a first position lien is that we have very little cash flow with left over to pay that second mortgage. I'll get a lot more cash flow next year when I renew the leases and up the rents. So if I can, you know, make no payments for 24 months, would that help?
Yes.
Right? How about capitalize the loan? You know what that means? How about no payments for 24 months and I add 2 years of interest onto your principal, and starting in month 25, I'll start paying on your principal plus the interest I didn't pay you for the remainder of the note, effectively giving you a much higher return in a 5-year period? Right? Go look at credit card companies and every complaint you can find about student loans, and you'll find all the terms you need to do this. Okay. Yes, you can do anything, as long as your lender agrees to it. Any questions on that? Good? Okay. All right, finding money partners. The majority of people can and should be lending from their retirement accounts. If you don't have a retirement account, get one. Start lending out of it. This is how we make money without paying it to the government. This is how you start paying back that insane loan with all those points and inflation on the income you have. So straight debt position, ideally in a Roth for almost everybody in this room, because we'd rather pay our taxes today than tomorrow. Right? Other investment vehicles suck. One nice thing about being in financial Armageddon and a global margin call is everybody looks worse than we do. The stock market is probably not very sexy right now. The bond market, I don't know anybody who's still in it, but I imagine it's doing pretty poorly too, right? All your other options are looking bad. So a nice fixed rate of return backed by an income-producing hard asset, real sexy. Okay. How much cash do you need for you guys? It's going to be about 35% of the purchase price is going to be the size of the note you're going to need on the majority of the assets you take down. 75% loan, closing costs. Okay. Friends and family are an option. They're also typically the last people to lend to you. They want to see your success first. The stranger will lend to you first, which is crazy, but it's there. Networking with professionals, hello. This is where you raise money, guys. Look around the room. Average age of a lender is 40 to 60. That's not to say that there isn't the occasional 20-something who has a very large amount of cash to put somewhere. And you need to know your value proposition. Fundamentally, you are asking somebody to allow you to do an investment with their money and none of your own. You can dress that up however you'd like it, but that's the punchline, right? So you need to know, what is it you do that has value? Do you find the asset? Do you manage the asset? Do you have more assets coming? What is your value proposition? Right? Line from The Office, what would you say you do here? What I suggest you endeavor to do is become a super borrower. This has taken my partners and I the better part of a decade to pull off, and we strive to do better at it every day. This is what we call a super borrower. They are experienced in the type of transaction that they are doing. This is not your first rodeo. I'm not asking you to 100% finance me on my first rental property. We have the assets to cover the note. This is one of the harder ones to achieve, but it's totally worth it. If I'm asking you to borrow $100,000, is it because I need the $100,000 or because I'd rather not spend it? Right? It's real easy to pay you back, because if the whole thing went bad, I could just write you a check. This one can be argued either direction, but how it works for us at Coast to Coast, any given deal or note we have is only a small percentage of our current business. Which means I got a whole bunch of other ones, and statistically, it's unlikely they're all going bad at once, right? So, can float that. Subject asset has to have some degree of equity. It's got to have enough to cover it. I can't leverage $200,000 on a $100,000 asset. Not going to work. You're probably okay leveraging $105,000 on a $100,000 asset. Borrower needs to have an excellent reputation. These networks aren't that big. There's two ways to fail as a real estate investor. First is to quit, and the second is to screw over a private lender. Everybody will know real fast. Don't do that. Borrower needs to answer all of your questions, especially the uncomfortable ones, like why aren't you putting any money in this deal? And if you're a lender, monetary vacancy is our most annoying thing. Meaning, let's say I'm going to lend on rehabs. I like those fix and flip guys and get nice high numbers. And I'm going to lend that out at 12%. So I find me a nice rehabber. It's going to take my cash. And they go out and they do their rehab. They say it's going to take 6 months. 9 months later, I get back my money. So I made 9 points. Cool. How long before they find the next rehab? 3 months, 5 months, 6 months? That whole time, that money's sitting back in my account doing what exactly? Bleeding inflation. It would be nice if it did nothing. That would be an upgrade. It's a negative, right? So a super borrower is capable of calling you up and say, hey, guys, that loan you got with me, that one's coming to an end real shortly. I'm sending you over a payoff letter. You want me to pop an address for the next property on there, and we'll just roll you to the next one? And we'll just never give it back. Tell me when we're done. Right? Super borrower can do that. Keep the cash going. Make sense? So I suggest you all work towards some version of that, at least if you like 100% financing. Here's how that looks for us. when we create private notes at any given time, this is about every week, every other week, I have about 3 to 10 million in short to midterm notes. And that's first position, second position, and preferred equity for security. We do them all. Depends on the asset and what's going on with it. We're always able to roll those over to the next investment, or pretty much always. And then we do long-term stuff. Those are five-year, typically. I got 1 to 20 million of those. Those are always going to be a second position or a preferred equity. They will not be a senior debt. Is anybody in here only lend in first position? Okay, there's a few. Go ahead and correct me if anything I say is incorrect, right? The typical reason that you only lend in senior debt position is it's the easiest to foreclose on if something goes wrong, and it keeps more people out of the deal. There's nobody ahead of you, right? That good? That the reason? Any other reason that I'm forgetting? That's it? Okay, that's why people will say, I get first position or I'm out. You got two problems as a private lender with that attitude. Problem one, you're competing against everybody else. Everybody in that hall will tell me they will do a senior debt position. Everybody. And their rate is cheaper than you want to pay, be paid. So now it's a race to the bottom. Who's going to give me the best rate for first position? There's two ways you can overcome it. Either you're lending on an asset type that they won't. I'll give you an example. Most of lenders won't do an extremely small loan. There's a town we love buying in. It cash flows like there's no tomorrow. Average purchase price for us is like 15, 20 grand. All in, we're going to be maybe 50, 60K in that property. I can't get a loan for it because they want a minimum loan amount of 50,000. So if I can't jack it up to over 75, they won't even underwrite it. So I need to privately fund that. So there's an example of a niche you can operate in. Otherwise, if you want to be bigger than that, you got to beat everybody else. And your pockets may not be deep enough to do it. If I want to take down a $2 million asset, do you have 1.7 million? Because that's the loan amount. Make sense? Second position, and then my favorite is preferred equity. Who doesn't know what preferred equity is? Okay, two kinds of equity. Common equity, that's you, that's owning it. That's all the risk, all the reward. You're vulnerable to what we call a capital call. That means you can get a phone call that says you need to put more money in. And if you don't, the whole thing goes to shit. Or you lose equity. Somebody's got to pay the bill, and you're somebody. Preferred equity is a security on a note. So they own a portion of the entity that owns the property instead of a mortgage. And in the event of a default, they take the asset. So instead of this big, long, drawn-out foreclosure process, it's a phone call that says, hey, I'm executing the pledge agreement. I'm now the 100% owner. Goodbye. A little easier and more straightforward. Cool part about that is we can do it with senior debt in place. And now the guy who just defaulted on your loan is still the guarantor on the senior debt loan, but you own the entity and the asset. Sucks to be them. You can bring the mortgage current. You can fire sell the asset, or you can let them burn. Your call, and there'll be nothing they can do about it. So that's preferred equity. We like that one. It's also a lot easier to do. Second position, mortgages. I believe they're cool in Ohio. I know they're cool in PA. Don't do them in Texas. They vary by state. It's the foreclosure law process. You want to protect your investor. Second positions are fine as long as the subject asset is in a state where they still can do stuff. In PA, a second can basically stop a foreclosure indefinitely until they're satisfied. So you're probably going to get bought out. All right. Cool. Any questions, guys? Good? Thank you. Yes, sir. Question was, how does the preferred equity work? Is it it's in the operating agreement. You can choose to have it notarized. That's fine. But yes, it's placed in there. And then there's a few ways to do it. One of our favorites is a pledge agreement, which the way that would work is, okay, you're going to do effectively the second position. You'll take the mezzanine debt. So we'll do an addendum that says you're going to get 1% equity in the asset or in the LLC for your capital contribution of whatever it is, and you will be receiving a return of whatever their terms are. And the general partner pledges the remaining 99% of equity against those terms. So in the event of a default, you get the other 99. Congratulations, you're in charge. Right? So it can get kind of sexy. You can be put on the bank account and that kind of thing as well. You are part of the company, and yes, you come before first position. It is superior to a first position lien in every state in the country. Yes, sir. Would we work with a lawyer? Yeah, we would. Now, when we do these, I've done a lot of them. I don't want to pay a lawyer every time. It's the same thing with a different address. We do it that way. But initially, if you've never done one before, you're probably going to either have your lawyer draft docs for that, or you're going to provide docs for them to review and make sure it's all done the way they want it to. Yeah. Yes, sir. Do we service the loans, or do we have a third-party servicer? In my case, we service them. They're all set up ACH, get paid like everything else. So we have a rather.
Lenders, the W-2 that they're sending you.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
So you're sending the lenders, like here's the not W-2.
1099. Yes, correct. When you go to make a note for the first time, among the documents we'll be getting a W-9 off of you. Even if it's a retirement account, we get it. You just take it and throw it in the trash, but it still gets sent. Still happens. So yes, and generally we set them up ACH, but terms vary wildly. In our case, we default to a monthly payment, but there are times and whole actually very good reasons where you don't want paid that often. You may want paid annually or delayed, all kinds of stuff. Usually it's a tax implication of some sort, things like that. Go ahead. Is there a good source for an example? You could lend me some amount of money and then you could steal mine. That'll work. there's my biased answer. Otherwise, you're gonna need a state specific, it's gonna be a lawyer thing. So, yeah. It's generally these are not insignificant loans, right? It's not $500. tens and hundreds of thousands is kind of where we start on these. Okay. We have, I think this week I have five $50,000 to $60,000 notes. Four of them are first position liens. So you guys want to do any of those? We can have that talk and get that stuff going. But yeah, that's the structure. That's how it works. Anything else?
So you're saying that you're finding on the MLS properties that with DSCR at 1.2.
Yeah.
100% financing.
So are we finding properties at DSCR at 1.2 at 100% financing? If you don't count the second financing, sure. You can do that. If you do, your objective is to be above one.
Okay.
It might be 1.02.
So you're like, if I'm cash flowing $10 a month, so it doesn't matter, that's still infinite return.
Correct, yes, it is an infinite return. Two things if you go down that rabbit hole. We do, we're very comfortable with it. First is, you better put in reasonable reserves in your underwriting. right? Don't cut it too low. On the other hand, if you make them too high, it won't work. So you do have to balance that. On top of that, I recommend some level of cash sitting around just in case it goes south. You got to be able to float it for a minute. Because at least for the first year or two, your cash flow is $30. Like there's nothing left. We paid it all out. What you're really getting, I know there's a bunch of much, much smarter than me tax guys here. You're getting losses for the first couple of years, really nice ones. It's beautiful. Plus two mortgage pay downs, which may not seem like a lot on a single family house, but I promise you on a 30 unit portfolio, it's a lot. It adds up real quick. Tens of thousands a year in tax-free equity gain. So we love that, right? Anything else? Yes, sir.
So you are those turnkey?
Yep, I am one of the partners. Yeah.
So you supply houses with some turnkey investor?
Correct. We sell portfolios, not individual houses, an entire portfolio with management and financing, yes.
And you help them get those loans at the end?
Yes. So when I underwrite the asset, I underwrite it for basically the minimum out-of-pocket we can possibly get to using senior debt. I don't give you your private lender. You're going
to
bring your own.
So I have to fund that private lender.
Correct. Otherwise, the question from my point of view is, what exactly do you do here? I found the deal. I managed the deal. I funded the deal, and then I give it to you? So at some point, I need something, guys. There's little capitalism for me, please. Correct. We'll get you basically by today's standards, and I mean today, because it would have been different last week, you're going to need a 25% down plus closing costs. And closing costs are 4 to 6%, depending on municipality. There's a real swing there, at least in my world. That floats a little bit. Also, in my world, there's the way the property taxes are reassessed. We can basically choose to do a fancy trick when we buy the property that prevents the taxes from being reassessed. Cost of that is around an additional 2 points. You'll decide whether you would rather pay an extra $7,000 to $10,000 a year in taxes for the rest of eternity, or keep that for the next 20 years in exchange for another $15,000 down or something. So.
What state are you in?
Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh. Do I have any deals for sale? I have a 22 unit that is about 2.7 mil. You'll need about $1 million to do it, right in there. It's a good deal for the right investor. If the investor I'd like to see take that one, that's actually slightly different than my normal philosophy, which is hold on to it until we die and then leave it to someone else. Someone who really loves and believes in free and clear property, that's their deal, because that one is 12 units of multi and 10 singles. And the singles will appreciate great. They have equity. They cash flow for shit. So you hold on to them for 5 years, sell them all off, take the proceeds, pay off the, or severely pay down the multis, keep the multis forever. That's that one. So it's actually kind of an odd deal for me, because that's its ideal exit strategy. Mm-hmm. Yep. Anything else? You guys learned something? That's it. That's all direct closing stuff. I know it's not super high level. It's like, that's what it takes to close a deal right now.
Thank you.
Go over what you said again about you had the slide with the delay payments for 24 months, and then you said something about right after that. Like
capitalized loan.
Yeah.
So if you lend